A thing that looks like a police box standing in a junkyard. It can move anywhere.
Haven, concentrate on Sin. Give priority to the detectors and the navigation systems.
There is a corridor. And the corridor is time. It surrounds all things.
On display, I eventually had to go down to the cellar.
That's the display department.
With a torch.
The lights are probably gone.
So had the stairs.
Yours is number 6.
I am not a number. I am a person.
Welcome to British Invaders, episode 470. This is the podcast all about British science fiction television, and this time we are talking about the Aphrodite Inheritance. This is Brian from Canada.
And this is Eamon from England. Hello.
This is a 1979 BBC show with 8 50-minute episodes, and it has an intriguing mixture of conspiracy and crime thriller elements with some mythological and supernatural elements. And it is set on the island of Cyprus and uses that and the Greek setting quite extensively.
Yes, and I'm going to say that it's another show that taps into that 1970s interest in overseas travel, particularly for us here in Britain, this idea of these wonderful sunny locations in the Mediterranean that we could perhaps visit, or at least if we couldn't visit, we could watch interesting television programs about them.
Yes, and flying places had become more practical at that point.
Indeed. So the setup for this show, David Collier has been called to Cyprus because his brother Barry has been involved in a car accident and is very severely ill. Sadly, Barry does indeed die before David arrives, and so David is left on the island of Cyprus to arrange his brother's funeral and to deal with all the paperwork and legalities that are needed when a loved one passes away, to wrap up Barry's estate, sort out his house on Cyprus, and so on.
That's right. The local police believe it was a straightforward car accident and do not want to investigate any further at all. And the construction company that Barry worked for is sympathetic and helpful, but not interested in any further investigation or questioning either.
However, David is contacted by an American businessman who does seem very interested in Barry and Barry's activities before his death and exactly what his brother David may know of them. And then there's even more complications because the barman at the hotel that David is staying at introduces him to a mysterious and very beautiful woman who tells him that his brother was in fact murdered and that he left behind a briefcase full of money.
That's right. And we have all of the elements for this innocent abroad type thriller all coming in place.
Very much so, yes.
So getting into the characters, David Collier, played by Peter McHenry, is a pretty straightforward person who's just trying to mourn his brother and sort out his brother's affairs. And he gets caught up in this mystery of this woman showing up and then disappearing, and a briefcase with a large quantity of money in it connected to his brother, and attempts on his own life. All of these strange things that suddenly start happening, and not everyone seems to believe that these things are happening. So he's caught up in all sorts of things.
Now, I mentioned a bartender at the hotel, Haralambos, played by Stefan Griff, who I believe is a Polish actor. He seems to be the barman at the hotel. He makes special drinks for David, his own particular concoctions, and introduces him to the mysterious Helene. But when the police start to investigate, nobody at the hotel seems to know this man. Nobody seems to recognise his name or his description at all, and he has disappeared. Won't be the first character to disappear in this show.
That's right. Helene herself, played by Alexandra Bastido from The Champions. We remember her from there. She is a beautiful woman who seems to appear and then disappear with no explanation, and even starts to haunt David's dreams and is there when it is most convenient or maybe inconvenient and disappears just as quickly.
A third mysterious character shows up to help or perhaps to hinder David, and that is Basilius. And he is played by the legendary Brian Blessed, who needs, I think, no introduction from us. Another sort of strange character. He rescues David after an assassination attempt. He seems to be living wild in the country at first and using herbs to heal David after his injuries, and also to introduce him to the joys of Greek wine. And he's a character who sings, and it's a sort of larger-than-life performance from Brian Blessed that we've come to expect, and let's be honest, to come to enjoy, Brian.
Yes. We do have some shouty Brian in this, although not quite to the extent as some of his appearances. Eugene Hellman, played by Paul Maxwell, who was the voice of Steve Zodiac in Fireball XL5, the 1960s Gerry Anderson Super Mario Nation show. Hellman is this rich American businessman who is living on his yacht that is sort of anchored just off Cyprus, and he can come and go from there quite easily. And he has an interest in what the late Barry Collier was up to, and he's after some information and is frequently making contact with David Collier. And we don't always know what his motivations are.
Not at all. Very mysterious. We've also got a character called Eric Morrison, played by William Wilde. He works at the same construction company where Barry Collier worked. He arranges another strange and covert meeting with his brother David, because Morrison has made a discovery, and without giving any more away, we're going to say that that discovery sort of lies somewhat at the center of the conspiracy and the crime angle that is going on in this show.
That's right. We also have Martin Preece, played by Tony Doyle. He is the manager of the construction company where Barry was working. He's very helpful and very kind to David, but we also don't know what his motivations are and if there's something else going on there as well.
Interesting stuff.
Yeah, lots of questions about a lot of these characters. So there is a lot happening in the these 8 episodes. David's hotel room is broken into by 2 different thieves at the same time. And we have a wonderful moment of one thief being attacked by another, and we don't know quite why this has happened.
All while David's in the toilet, it seems, and misses it all.
Yes, that's right.
And of course, we've got the mysterious briefcase, which is going to become a little bit of a MacGuffin in the show. He's given it. David gets possession of it, but is almost immediately then his car is run off the road, he's beaten up, and he's robbed of the case that he's not had for very many minutes at that point. Then there's the meeting with Morrison, which is interrupted by gunshots. This leaves David alone and injured in the remote hills above the town in Cyprus. So there's a more dramatic stuff going on there. And of course, whenever he gets back to the police, the local police inspector seems almost consistently uninterested in everything that's happening to David. Particularly, of course, that David has a problem that nobody else seems to have seen Haralambos, the mysterious Helene, or Basilius. Nobody else seems to know these characters. And as you've said, Brian, they do seem to sort of manage to slip away or disappear at the most inconvenient moments for David.
Yes, and we have these wonderful repeated moments of the police inspector ridiculing David Collier and telling him that, no, these things aren't happening. This is just ordinary, everyday stuff that's happening. You must be imagining it.
Absolutely.
And we have these mysterious locals involved, and there's something at a cave that's been discovered with both the late Barry Collier and Eric Morrison being involved, and there are questions about what that is, and is there something important there?
So we're going to turn to our production notes now, and there's some interesting stuff. I enjoyed researching this one, Brian.
Yes, so The Aphrodite Inheritance was created by the writer Michael J. Bird. We've encountered him before. Bird was a a British writer who lived from 1928 to 2001, and he did some interesting things. We've seen him before.
Yes. So let's talk about how he got into television writing, because he was he did a variety of odd jobs as a young man before becoming, in his own words, a not terribly successful novelist. But it was when he began writing for British television in the 1960s, doing episodes of shows like Danger Man, Special Branch, Out of the Unknown, which we've covered. That's when he started, I think, to become successful. And then in 1972, he creates a show for the BBC called The Lotus Eaters, which, you know, spoilers, was another one of these Mediterranean shows, or rather was the first of his Mediterranean shows. He'd originally planned to set it on Ibiza, which was an island that he'd lived on briefly in the 1950s. And he had a story about some British expats, you know, frequenting a bar there.
Yes, but finding the right location for the Lotus Eaters was proving difficult until Bird was on holiday in Crete and discovered a small town that was a match for exactly what he wanted to do with that script. And the show was done that way with Crete. It starred Ian Hendry, who was the star of the first season of The Avengers in the early 60s, and also starred Wanda Ventham, who we remember from U.S. UFO. And that was a big hit for the BBC, and it led to a second series of The Lotus Eaters, which ran in 1973. And this was the first of Bird's four Mediterranean shows that he created in the 1970s and the 1980s.
After The Lotus Eaters, he creates Who Pays the Ferryman in 1977, also set on Crete, and also another big hit for the BBC, a series that starred Jack Headley, an actor I know from the British show Colditz. And Michael J. Bird obviously completed his quartet in 1983 with The Dark Side of the Sun, which we have covered already back in British Invaders 355 and 356. That one was set on Rhodes, and like I say, it was a show that we quite liked from 1983. Now, I should mention, of course, we're going to get to the show that's in the gap, because after The Lotus Eaters and Who Pays the Ferryman, the BBC were understandably quite keen for Michael J. Bird to do another one.
Yes, and by this time, Bird actually had his own production company, but was finding that filming on Crete was getting expensive. So he instead struck this deal with the authorities on Cyprus, and they were quite keen to have the BBC doing a production there. And Michael J. Bird actually said that he only came up with the idea for that story while he was on the plane on the way to meet with the Cypriot Broadcasting Company to discuss it.
Interesting admission from him. But yes, he seems to have been quite good at organizing deals with the various television networks on these islands. So yes, and in fact, I think it's fair to say that Cyprus was so keen to watch the BBC. I found this rather charming clip from the local news that's on YouTube, where you can see the cast and crew of the Aphrodite Inheritance arriving at the airport and being taken off to a fairly lavish reception at the local Cypriot Broadcasting Company headquarters. I'm not sure that cast and crew get so much fuss made about them when they arrive at a location these days, Brian. So it's rather nice to see this from the 70s.
Yes, that's right. And it was at a time when these public broadcasting corporations from various countries were more active and doing better than they are now. So it's nice to look back to that too.
And we've mentioned that Michael J. Bird sort of comes up with the story idea when he's on the plane to meet the broadcasting company in Cyprus. And of course, he was surprised and delighted to find that his own ideas about this mysterious cave in the show sort of coincided with some recent archaeological discoveries that were going on the island of Cyprus pretty much at the same time. So a nice nice little symmetry there.
That's great.
Yes, I know. I did check into this, and I know that, strange enough, my old university, Leicester University, are involved in some of the archaeology and the digs that are going on still on Cyprus, which is fascinating.
Oh, very nice.
Now, in terms of filming, they did stuff, unfortunately, back in rather dull old England. So all the interiors are shot back here before they headed to Cyprus for the exterior shoots.
That's right. And they built a series of sets, including ones that could be flooded and effectively destroyed for the final episode. And they were filming at Ealing Studios, and the flooding, they did that there as well. They actually had trouble with the fiberglass statues they had that were meant to look like stone statues and did look pretty close to stone, but they would float around on the water, so they had to be careful and stop that.
It's a story I think I've heard from other productions as well, is that when you start flooding things, all this stuff you made out of fiberglass starts to float.
Yes, once you introduce water, things get pretty messy sometimes. The series was directed by Victor Retilis and Terence Williams.
And we've got music composed by George Katsonis, who delivered a mixture of very sort of local appropriate theme music for the show, but also some interesting electronic incidental music as the series progresses. And we'll talk a little bit more about music next time, Brian.
Yes, it's an interesting score. The Aphrodite Inheritance was broadcast on Wednesday evenings at 8 p.m. on BBC One, starting on January 3rd, 1979.
And strangely, according to the BBC Genome website, it doesn't appear to have been repeated. This was from the period of time when the BBC was sort of had this rather dodgy reputation for always showing repeats. And this is a strange show that they spent quite a lot of money on. I would have thought this one would have been repeated, but who knows how these things go.
I would have expected repeats, but yeah, sometimes the deals they make with other production companies and so on, you never know how things work out.
Indeed. So, availability. Here in Region 2, there was a Simply Media DVD release in 2014. It is still available, thank goodness, but it is getting rather expensive now. It's £40, which is more than it was when I bought this a year or so ago, I think, Brian. Look on the second-hand markets and you will find copies. You can also find it to rent on cinemaparadiso.co.uk, the rental site here. It's not a show that's streaming yet. I would imagine at some point in the future this will be on streaming, but at the moment I couldn't find it anywhere. I'd also say there's no bonus features on the DVD. It's just the 8 episodes, it seems. So, but it is available over here. You can get it and watch it.
In Region 1, there is no release, and there were no imports on Amazon.com or Amazon.ca that I saw with reasonable prices. There were a couple of very expensive ones, but you may be looking at imports from the UK for this one.
And is getting pricey. It is a shame.
There is a novelization that we'll talk about more next time, and that is available. It's even on Kindle, so that part is still around.
Great stuff.
So next time, we will talk about some of the mythological and supernatural elements of this show. So we'll get into some spoilers about the end of the show. We'll get into more of that next time.
And we've got those two spin-offs from the show that we're going to come back to and just mention in a little bit more detail.
Very exciting.
Indeed. Plus, of course, we'll get to our own reviews and recommendations. And as we've said, those spoilers coming up.
Absolutely. So until then, you can find all of our episodes at BritishInvaders.com. And if you search for British Invaders on Facebook, you can find our group there and join us on some conversations. And you can also follow us on Threads and on Instagram. We are at British_Invaders_podcast on both of those platforms.
Indeed we are. Give us a follow or come by the Facebook and say hello. And say hello to the voice Voice of Geeks Network, which you will find at voguenetwork.com. Find our podcast, other podcasts, Twitch streaming, gaming content, all sorts of good stuff going on at the Voice of Geeks Network, voguenetwork.com.
Absolutely. So thank you for listening. And this is Brian from Canada signing off.
Yes, thank you very much. Until next time, Eamon in England also signing off.